Welcome to the International Schools Podcast, where we discuss all aspects of technology and life in international schools, with new episodes live every 2 weeks. This podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We're a Google for Education partner and active since the launch of Google Apps for Education in 2006. We're a team of former educators and all experts in helping schools integrate Google into their schools and their classrooms. All training is customized for each school, and we make sure it has a lasting impact. Literally thousands of educators worldwide have earned their Google Educator certification with us, with our certification boot camps, and these take place every month and get your staff certified quickly. We also host Google Summits, which are fun, two-day conference-style events with concurrent sessions and keynotes delivered by experienced Google trainers, teaching on a broad range of topics using G Suite both in the classroom and in the school. Check it out over at appsevents.com, and we can bring any of these events to your school, which is an amazing way to build a Google community amongst your staff to support each other, plus to increase the profile of yourself and your school. The podcast is also brought to you by Acer for Education. People ask us what Chromebooks we recommend for schools, and after trying them all, quite literally, we always recommend Acer. We've been to Acer headquarters in Taiwan to be part of product discussions, and they're genuinely the best thought out, most cost-effective, and most importantly, durable devices out there. They're always innovating, including the first tablet running Chrome and the first convertible touchscreen Chromebook. The latest version of this is a Spin 11, which has a stylus and two cameras, and we highly, highly recommend it for schools. They, of course, have a full range of Windows laptops, and for esports fans, their Predator range is second to none. If you'd like more information, please just leave your email over at gg.gg/Acer Education. That's gg.gg/Acer Education, and we'll get right back to you. And now, on to the interview. Hello and welcome to the International Schools Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Craig Kemp on the line from Singapore. How are you doing, Craig?
Doing well, thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, so I've known Craig for a while. Basically, as I mentioned on the podcast, we run Apps Events. We run Google training and certification all around the world. And now iStitch certification, by the way, I'd like to put that out. And Craig has presented at quite a few of our events. And I've met you, Craig, in a few places, definitely in Bangkok, in Nepal, anywhere else? I'm not sure.
No, I don't think so, just those two.
Yeah, but you presented at quite a few of our events, so and you've done some keynotes. Great to talk to you. I think it's a really interesting topic. You know, you had a background in education and you went to become a consultant, which a lot of people are thinking about doing. It's, you know, not without its difficulties, so I think it'd be great to have a chat about, you know, your journey and what you've done.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Cool, mate. So just background, if you're online, Craig's website is mrkempnz.com, mrkempnz.com. So do you want to start at the beginning, Craig? Like, how did you start off, like start from sort of university? Did you always want to get into schools and education?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, growing up in New Zealand, my dad was head of IT at Nelson Hospital. So we grew up in a small town called Nelson at the top of the South Island of New Zealand.
It's where the ferry goes to.
Have you?
Yeah, the ferry goes there, doesn't it?
Yeah, really close. Yeah, it goes to Picton and it's a short drive across. Yeah, exactly, it's a beautiful part of the world. Absolutely love it. And so grew up there, lived there my whole life. My parents still live there now. My dad is an IT manager of a hospital, so was always around the latest bits of technology growing up in the 80s and 90s. He was always keen to throw around, create a computer, build it, let us play on it, you know, all of those sorts of things. And my mum, actually, the whole way through of my schooling, of my primary schooling, she was just a volunteer. She was a stay-at-home mum and a volunteer at my primary school. I moved off to intermediate and high school, and by the time I got to high school, she decided that she wanted to retrain as a 40-year-old in the workplace, wanted to go back, do some training, and become a teacher. Throughout my high school time,
I always love seeing people who like make mid-career changes, and especially, I mean, even if I guess it's even it was even less likely then. I mean, it's becoming now; it's much more likely, but it's great to see always.
Absolutely, I love that, and I think that's one of the reasons why I still have that continuous drive and thirst for learning. And you pointed out earlier on that Apps Events is now ISTE able to do ISTE certifications, and I'm in the middle of my ISTE certification right now, actually. So as a side note to that, I mean, that's sort of where I've got my thirst and drive for learning and that continuous hunger to learn. And so, yeah, I went through high school, got to the end of high school and thought, geez, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've no idea. I want to go away and do something. So I thought for a while, went to the careers counselor and she said, I think that you're perfectly aligned to be a teacher. It's not something I'd ever thought about. And I thought, I've got no idea what I want to do. I thought I wanted to do something with sports medicine or sports science. So sort of aligned my topics in high school to that. Went away to teachers training college. From the moment I started the practical element of teacher training college, I loved it and I was hooked. And from there, I trained as a primary school teacher and moved. After the end of my teacher's college training, I moved down to Dunedin at the bottom of the South Island and got my first full-time job. And I worked down there, lived down there, decided that after 7 years of teaching down there and almost 8 years of teaching and living down in Dunedin to make the move to Singapore. So in those first 7 or 8 years of teaching, I sort of took on the a few hats, I guess. So when I left, I was deputy principal. I took on the lead ICT. We were one of the first schools in New Zealand to roll out a one-to-one iPad program, starting off with just a few iPads when it was first released 10 years ago, and just went from there. And we sort of leading the way with what we were trying to do with kids in classrooms. So I'd always had that hunger and thirst for technology. Moved over to Singapore with my wife the year we got married.
Been here 8 years now. Sorry to interrupt. So I guess you were doing a combination of you doing some teaching and some sort of technology stuff. Was it like a mixed role, I guess, in the beginning?
Yeah. So actually, in my primary school, it was almost all teaching. So I had 100% teaching load. Everything else was sort of like a passion, just doing it because I enjoyed it. So doing the IT integration, running PD for staff, setting up the iPads, using it as sort of a model in my classroom. Had a really supportive principal, and I think that really helped, having a leader that was willing to support me in what I was doing. Massive. Yep. It was really extra.
Great. Now, how did you, why did you think about working for international schools? Because obviously I've had quite a few people email me, listen to this, who are like, you know, thinking of working for international schools. And I can see why personally. I love working with international schools. That's kind of why I gave the name of this podcast. It's great. I mean, some people... I mean, do you think it's a good way to do it, to work for your local country and then go into it? Or do you think, you know, it's good to jump straight into it? And also, like, why did you want to go work for an international school?
I personally think, so in New Zealand, as part of your teacher registration, you're required to teach for 2 years full time coming out of university before you can have your registration confirmed. So I think, depending on the country you come from, I think having experience teaching a diverse range of learners, having interactions with a diverse range of parents is kind of key before you move to an international environment. It's very different. I think the reason why we decided to move internationally was we wanted to change. We wanted to do something different. We were both young. We were in our late 20s and we wanted to do something different. So we just came to the decision. My wife's not a teacher, so came over. Just both of us just decided to apply for jobs. She works in marketing and communications, and we just made the call together that we will just go wherever we get our first job. And it just so happened to be here in Singapore.
And did you go to one of the international school teacher fairs, or how did you get the job?
Yeah, interesting. No, I didn't. I actually, funnily enough, had no idea they even existed. I think for a lot of people out there, I mean, my source of being connected is Twitter. And I didn't really understand the whole idea of international school teaching because I lived and worked in that bubble of national local primary school, doing my thing, working with the New Zealand national curriculum. I had no idea that this sort of lifestyle and this sort of world existed until my cousin actually was teaching internationally. And I sort of chatted to him, learned a little bit about it. I actually went to visit him when I graduated high school, and he was teaching in Nairobi in Kenya. And it was a real eye-opener for me to the world of international education. And honestly, we haven't looked back, and I'm at the point now where I would love to be able to go back and support New Zealand education and do some things there, but I really don't think I could go back to living and teaching in New Zealand just based on the experiences, the amazing day-to-day life I have here as a teacher and now as a consultant.
Funny, it's funny, you say that, like, I started working with international schools 10 years ago, you know. I worked with the International School of Prague. I was in the Google stuff, Google area. I'd never worked in education before, you know. And then I started working with them, and then, you know, it was really a bunch of fortuitous events, you know, that we ran an event at International School of Prague. We had people come from the US, from Bangkok, from, and then, you know, I started working with these guys. But I was like, I didn't even know about this world of international schools. I'm like, wow, you know, I would have gone into it 100% from university, you know. I didn't even know about it, you know. It was, I mean, yeah, I knew about, obviously, the UK education system, which, honestly, I had pretty negative views on at the time. You know, I went to school in the Thatcher years when there was a lot of industrial action with teachers. There was a lot of, I'd say, low motivation generally, you know, like about pay and conditions. I'm sure some of it justifiable, but it ended up, we were kind of losers, the students, you know. So I didn't have a very positive view of education, honestly, growing up. And I think I saw international schools and I'm like, wow, this is actually like a fun atmosphere for kids. Like they're, teachers are investing in their learning. And I know, you know, people are going to tell me they've got bigger budgets than state schools, and that's true. But still, I was like, you know, this is a world I want to be part of, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I mean, for me, I come from the public education system. I'm a public education boy, was in a public school my whole life, taught in a public school for my first 7 or 8 years of teaching. And then all of a sudden, I'm thrust into this international private school here in Singapore. And I was in an Australian curriculum school, so a new curriculum, new people, didn't know anyone, had no connections here, didn't know the culture. So the first sort of 18 months were tough, really tough. And we genuinely thought we'd come over, do a 2-year contract and go home, make a bit of money, enjoy the world, do a lot of traveling, and then go. Yeah. And we have been here 8 years now. It's an amazing life. I mean,
we've stayed there. I mean, you know, I'd say the typical international school route is, you know, do say 3 years, 4 years, one place, move along, move around the world a little bit. But some people just find somewhere they want to stay, and I guess that's what you've done.
I think we've done it poorly. I look back now and I wish that we didn't start in Singapore. Singapore is like the golden relic of teaching places. I mean, it's a place where people come and they don't leave. We wish that before we had kids, we'd tried out the Thailands, you know, the Cambodias, the Laos, the other the Indonesias, Malaysias, the other parts of Asia, because we absolutely love it. Even Europe. I mean, we wish we'd done something different. Now we're here. We've had 2 kids here, 6 and 2 now, and I mean, it's a pretty good lifestyle. It's pretty safe. It's clean. It's everything you want, and we've got that, and it's great fun. I mean, when we moved here, like I said before, we thought we'd be here for a year or two, and we've made good friends. I mean, that's part of it that we had to get used to as well. Friends come and go, colleagues come and go. It's sort of that nature of international teaching is that people will come and stay, and it's very contract driven. So you get very good at meeting new people. You get really good at networking. You get really good at those sorts of skills that are transferable back if you ever want to go back.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. A confession to make on the podcast, because I mean, I've been to Asia, you know, like millions of times. I'm there a few times a year. I've never been to Singapore, which is kind of crazy. I've been to Hong Kong. I don't know how many tens of times I've been to Hong Kong. I've been to every single country in Asia, you know, even the small ones like, you know, Laos and Cambodia and all these places. Never been to Singapore. It's just bizarre chain of events how it never happens. But I mean, you're the first person who's been on a podcast living there. Like, what was it like? Because I'm sure there's people thinking about living there. Like, what was it like in the beginning in terms of like the social scene for teachers? Were you, obviously you're already married. Were you kind of with the teachers, or were you not really involved in the social scene? And what was it like?
Yeah, I guess the good thing about international schools, I mean, the good thing about teachers is that teachers like to stick together. Yeah. Teachers talk school wherever they go, right? So a good thing about international schools is that you're connected with a whole bunch of people who are in the same situation as you. Coming into a new school, there's probably 20, 30 teachers that are new in the same position as you at the same time. So you very quickly build those bonds. You create friendships. And so for us, it was, I was coming over with a job and my wife had nothing for 6 months. So immediately our friendship group were my teaching colleagues, and my wife got really close with some of my friends who are teachers at the school as well. And so that was the cool thing about it, is that it really is a community. And I mentioned networking before in a professional sense, but networking in a personal sense here, amazing. I mean, you've got teaching couples, you've got singles, you've got married couples with kids, you've got all this diverse range. You've got teachers with 40 plus years experience, teachers with no years of teaching experience who are new and fresh. And everyone's here for different reasons, but everyone here is here to look after each other too. And that's the kind of feel that I have. And now I'm sort of, as I think forward to now, you know, I'm not in a school teaching anymore. I'm consulting, but I have kids in the school and I still connected with the school that I was teaching at. And my kids are there and I still have that connection with them, but now I have that connection as a parent, which is another aspect to all of this as well, is living in a foreign country is really different. I mean, Singapore is a Western country. It's not that hard to acclimatize to living here, but there's cultural differences. The cool thing about Singapore is it's a melting pot for cultures. There's just about everyone here and it's sort of harmonious. Everyone gets on, likes each other, you know, it's great.
Yeah, no. Did your wife end up working for a school or getting a job, or was she looking after the children?
Yeah, good question. No, she did. She ended up getting a job. She's worked for a business school here in Singapore called INSEAD, French Business School.
Yeah, I know it very well.
Yeah, so she's been working with INSEAD now for over 6 years. Loves it and works in their executive MBA program, doing some sales and marketing stuff across the program. So yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, I was actually looking at that MBA. I still haven't ruled it out, actually. It's really interesting. I have a friend who went through it, and it's actually it's really interesting. You know, they do a few sites. Brazil, I think, is one of them. Singapore, it's and France. It's a really good program.
It's an amazing program, yeah.
Yeah, now how so? Did you move schools mid-time? Like, did you work for another school, or did you stay in the same role? And what kind of roles were you doing in Singapore?
Yeah, so I moved over to an Australian curriculum school called Avondale Grammar School. So it was a small sort of 400-student school from kindergarten through till year eight. And it was a real cool little community school. And I was working there teaching year three and four, moved to teaching year five and six, took on an IT leadership role. So we ended up working in the middle school, teaching some mathematics, some humanities in the middle school. And then the rest of my time was in technology integration, supporting teachers across the school in integrating technology. And that's sort of where I found my feet, I guess, with my role of being an educator that supports teachers in using technology authentically and purposefully. And that's sort of my base ground. That's where I learned to do everything. That's where I learned myself. No one was doing it for me. I went out and went on Twitter and did all my self-learning, and I took courses and I did my own stuff, and I went overtime to make sure I was the best at what I could be in that field. So I, after 3.5 years, I was ready for a change, ready for something bigger and better, and an opportunity came up at a large international school here in Singapore called Stamford American. 3,200 kids, 500 teachers, kids from the age of 2 through to 18. And an opportunity came up as a director of technology and innovation. And I was lucky enough to get that. And I worked at the school supporting teachers, growing a program, developing a strategy, grew our coaching team from just myself through to a team of five by the time I left that supported our school and the way technology was used. All of those people off full-time, supporting off timetable, supporting other teachers and how they use technology, developing programs, running PD, supporting parents, community. And it was really inspirational. So that's one of my favorite decisions and moves was leaving a job I loved. And that feeling of leaving was really tough, but moving to a new role was incredibly rewarding.
Definitely. Now, I think one of the things people listening to this are going to be the most interested in is becoming a consultant, because it's something a lot of people talk about and a few people do. Where did the idea come? And was it a gradual thing, or was it something you decided you wanted to do? Because I think it'd be great to get into the actual logistics of how that came about and how you built that kind of, you know, side hustle to be a business.
Yeah, it's funny because I my whole life as an educator, I've actually hated the idea of being a consultant. I've hated the idea of learning from someone, and the idea of a consultant to me, and probably many of the people listening, was someone who is no longer a teacher, no longer understands the way teachers do things, disconnected from schools. I always thought that I will never do that. I will be a teacher and I'll do my thing and I'll support kids and I'll help parents. You know, I'll do that for the rest of my life. And in my mind, that word consultant was always someone who was disconnected from a school that was too focused on research and books and, you know, pedagogy, and they never got into schools to see how it worked. And I had the opportunity several times to speak at conferences over the past 8 years, and I had the opportunity to share a little bit about what we were doing at my school, and it happened to stand now, up at a conference.
So I'm going to jump in as you go. Like, how did you get to speak at those conferences? Because the thing about this podcast is it's all trying to get some tips people can follow, and people want to speak at conferences. Like, how did you? Because you know, people obviously don't just come and beg you to pick up a conference. You either approach them or you put yourself out there so they contact you. So, like, how did you get these speaking gigs?
I set the original one up as a blog as a teacher training more than 15 years ago now, and as a reflection tool, and that's what it was for many years. And I was reflecting on lessons I taught and my experiences, and I started sharing that with people.
Sorry, Craig, we had
interviews. I share it with them.
You got cut off for a second. Could you just start again? I think you were talking about your website. We lost you for a second. If you could just jump in on that again.
Yeah, so I set up a website, MrKempNZ.com, and that's sort of where it all started for me. I started blogging as a teacher, just sharing my experiences. I didn't think anyone was reading it. I started getting connected, developed my own professional learning network, which was on Twitter. And I started sharing things and started connecting with people. And I followed people. And then I met people and I attended conferences.
I'm going to jump in as we go. Skipping over a lot of stuff if it's good stuff. Like, how did you build your network on Twitter? Like, what was any actionable tips and how you did that, like, people could follow?
Yeah, so I mean, as I started following people, they followed back, and I made sure that I was not only I think one of the things about Twitter is I've been connected now for nearly 10 years on Twitter and been using it, and I think there's a lot of negative things about Twitter, but it's actually, I think, probably one of the most positive environments for teachers. And the good thing is there's teachers all over the world connected on Twitter, and if you're not connected on Twitter, definitely jump on. And I've got a few if you go to my blog, MrKempNZ.com, and just type in Twitter, there's a whole bunch of step-by-step guides on how to get started. And I think for me it was having someone to tweet along with, so finding other people that were willing to share their journey. And for me, it wasn't just being that silent person following everyone else. It was actually making that decision to follow teachers, to follow educators, to follow speakers, to follow conferences, to follow, you know, all of those, the people that are in education doing great things. That's where I did my learning. And I really quickly realized that this place is not just a place of abuse and negativity and people sharing and talking themselves up. It's actually one of the best learning places that I can get, and it costs me nothing. And
because I'm doing a similar thing in terms of building up a Twitter, like, and you obviously follow a lot of people, which is a great tip, I think. Did you do that like every day? Did you have someone help you? Did you do it yourself? Did you say, I'm going to follow people every day to build this up, and then use that, they'll follow you back and you engage? Was this like, or is it something you did once a week? Like,
that's a good question. I think for me, it was step by step, starting slow. I actually started with my first few weeks, I hated it. And I didn't connect at all with anyone. And then I realized that I followed two people, and then they would follow me back, and then someone else would follow me because I was connected to their colleague. And I started realizing that I followed two people, they'd follow me back. I followed five people the next day. And I slowly built it up to a time where I was sort of following 10 new people a day, and I was actively going on to find and click through conversations to find people doing things that interested me. So for me, that was teaching the same thing I taught. But I was actively looking for people outside of the bubble that I taught in. So no one in Singapore necessarily initially. And I was following people from all over the world. 10 people a day became 20 people a day, became 30, 40, 50 people a day. And it does, I mean, I've invested a lot of time in it. You can't get connected without investing time in it, just like networking, building a business, doing any of those things. I think that time's really important. But actively going out to follow teachers and educators was critical to me, and that was finding people that had a voice sharing what they do. Yeah. Then I found an interest in following edtech companies, which sort of led me to learning more about products and tools, and found that teachers were tweeting companies and companies were tweeting back and, you know, sharing tips for free. So a good example was like my school rolling out Seesaw. Everything I needed was instant through a message to them on social media. And companies now are so savvy on using social media that if you're not connected there, you're actually losing out. So for me, it was that active following of people and that active connecting. And I think that actually led me to getting connected to conferences. So that's going back to that question. I went, I started attending conferences as a teacher. And I think one of the good things about teaching internationally is that there's budget for that. You get budget for your own professional learning. And they're not going to hand it to you on a silver platter, but they will give you money to go and travel and to go and learn from other people. So I took advantage of that. And when I was at conferences, I tweeted, I used the hashtag. I had meetups. I met with people. I grew my network. I followed the hashtag and followed everyone that was at the conference. And, you know, I was actively trying to grow my network because I knew that was the best way for me to learn. And probably in a really good way that I wasn't really actively seeking, is that it actually helped me in my consulting business in the future as well. So anyone sort of thinking of consulting in the future, this professional learning network of teachers, if you're looking at consulting to educators, get in and get connected with them, because I've found now as a consultant that a lot of my work comes from the people that I've been connected with, because with the connection comes that whole new level of trust, authenticity, that I'm sharing things that I'm actually doing. Sharing snaps of things that I've done at school and, you know, actively sharing blog posts. And I think that idea of giving back for free is something that's not done enough. And there's not enough people out there willing to step out and say, hey, this is what I'm doing in my classroom. This is probably the best thing I can do as a reflection tool, is to share my practice with you. And I think if people can do that more, I think you get so much more from it, and that Definitely. Growing of your network becomes that little bit easier.
And you... So obviously, you know, obviously you're growing your Twitter now. Talking of conferences, I mean, you're attending conferences. I mean, what I found as well is, like, you can attend conferences and, you know, often you realize that, you know, there's often conferences need speakers, you know, and you're probably not going to get paid to speak, but that, you know, that shouldn't yeah. concern you in the beginning. And even now, you know, I you know, mostly speak for free. You know, I think it's a mistake to always, you know, there's often good opportunities from that. But did you just attend conferences and then say, look, I'm going to present, or how did that come about?
Yeah, sort of. It came from attending and then going, ah, I can do that. You know, like go to a session on Flipgrid or on G Suite. And, I'm doing that in my classroom.
Sure.
And then really just plucking up the confidence to these abstracts all the time, abstracts for teaching. And if you are attending a conference or you know a conference in your area, the best thing you can do is send them an email, reach out to them, say, hey, I'd love to talk next year at your conference.
Yep.
Give yourself time to develop that confidence, to run the session with your teachers at your school or with your colleagues or friends, and build up that confidence. And actually, to start with, I ran a session with a colleague of mine. We actually went in and did it together. And that's a really good way to start as well. But put your hand up. I mean, if you're in Asia, Apps Events is the perfect place to put your hand up and say, hey, I'm doing X, Y, Z with things, or there's conferences all over the place, wherever you're listening from. Yeah. Jump in and just reach out to people and say, I'd love to speak, I'd love to share. And it's the foot in the door. I mean, like you said, Dan, I am lucky enough now that I've been on the speaking scene and sharing scene workshops for 8 years sort of in Singapore, and I'm lucky enough now to get paid for several of the things I do. But just like you, I do a lot of things for free as well. Conferences in Singapore, I mean, conferences around the world. It's just one of those things you do. And I love it. And I think it's the best source of learning as well as sharing. I actually continue to grow my network now through speaking. But also as a speaker at a conference, a lot of the time you get a discounted ticket or a free ticket.
Yep.
To the event. So it's a really good way to give up your time. You run an hour workshop, and back for that is a few hours of workshops, and you get back a free ticket. So it's the best way for me to sort of make the most of my money as well.
Definitely. And like, tip to conference organizers, like, please give speakers a free ticket. We do it for all our events. It's kind of, you know, it's fine. You've got to make money as an event, or you've got to at least not lose money, you know, but sometimes I'm like, why are they making me pay to this event? You know, giving up a lot of time to visit. But, you know,
exactly.
It's life. It's supply and demand, yeah. I guess. If they're going to, you know, if they know enough people want to come, they'll do it.
Exactly.
Now, we've talked a lot about Twitter. Actually, I'm not transitioning, because I'm really focused on Twitter, but I'm getting more focused on LinkedIn now. And I've realized, especially like in leadership levels at school, that's, I've kind of maybe been blinkered to Twitter and maybe missed a little bit on LinkedIn. Are you active on LinkedIn, or are you really focused on Twitter?
It's funny, because what you described is exactly my story as well. I have sort of calmed the farm a little bit on Twitter and put a lot of energy and focus into LinkedIn, because I've seen a bit of a resurgence with people using Twitter, and particularly leaders, heads of school, educational technology companies. I mean, I've seen a real growth in the LinkedIn community, and I've been investing a lot of time in that as well recently for the exact same reason. And I'm really loving LinkedIn. I think one of the things that I met with a colleague who's consulting as well the other day, and I said, you know, like I can put a tweet out and get 100 likes on a tweet, but that's done in an hour and it's gone. It's out of people's feed. It's done. I can put a post on Facebook and it's the same thing. It's out of people's feeds within a couple of hours. But LinkedIn, I continue to get notifications for days, weeks, even months on posts that I'm putting up. So the lifespan of a post or a share or a connection lasts, I think, so much longer on LinkedIn. And it's kind of a cool observation to think about as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So look, I want to jump back into your story. So you're speaking at events. Like, how did that sort of transition from you, you know, getting paid consulting work? Were you started to work as a consultant while you were teaching, or did you wait until you finished to do that? How did that whole transition go?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I sort of compare my journey to a friend of mine's journey who's sort of gone cold turkey from teaching into consulting with no middle ground. I think my journey, and I feel like I've done a decent job of it as well, is that I probably could have gone consulting several years ago, but I just didn't. I was too scared, actually, because of the financial repercussions potentially of it.
Sure.
And so for 3 or 4 years, I was working full time and then consulting/speaking. So I was doing a lot of traveling work to Australia from Singapore and my school holidays, going over there and doing some work over there, speaking at conferences on weekends, doing school holiday conferences in places, and doing that as sort of a side hustle, I guess, as you put it earlier, like a way of getting connected, not really thinking that I'd go into it full time. But after a while, I realized that what I was sharing, particularly in Australia, it grew quite quickly of the work around developing strategies, was what I do a lot of now, EdTech strategy and innovation, supporting schools and one-to-one device programs, or just simply professional learning, helping teachers grow in the use of technology. And I realized that there's a real market for that. And there's actually money to be made in helping people do that. And I think from a school's perspective, the money that they spend on bringing in external consultants comes back at them tenfold.
I think
more schools need to do it. I'm not saying that because that's my job now, but I mean, I think you can pay someone $80,000 a year to work for you as a teacher, but they don't give back necessarily to your teachers, help them grow. You can spend that on 20 days of professional learning by bringing in external people and help build the capacity of your staff. And I think that's something I've been enjoying doing, is supporting it to build the capacity of teachers and leaders. And I think that's me doing that 3 or 4 years consciously part-time helped me have the confidence to leave my full-time job and jump into this. And it gave me the notice I had to give at my school. It actually gave me 12 months to really grow what I was going to do when I left full-time employment. I was able to book in jobs. I was able to lock in conferences. I was able to create my first customer list and start developing a timeline of when I was going to be working in schools, the times that I'd be in Australia, when I'd be here, what I'd do online. You know, it was the best thing I did was get connected to conferences, get connected to schools, and it really went from there for 3 or 4 years.
I think, you know, the evenings and weekends thing is a really good way to start for most people, because I've started my kind of things in a similar way. Because, like, if you don't want to be working on something, like, after a full day's work, that's probably a good sign you probably don't want to do it. Because, you know, like, here's the thing, like, being an entrepreneur is, like, okay, the plus is you do have flexibility, you know. Like, for example, this morning, I'm in Prague, I'm actually flying to the US tomorrow. I'm lucky enough to be going to the Googleplex for a big partner event. And I'm going to be in San Francisco for Super Bowl Sunday, so it's worked out really well.
That's amazing.
So I've got like a half day. I'm going to. It's morning here in Prague. I'm going to meet my wife and then do some stuff. So like that's the plus side. The plus side is I can go meet my wife for coffee and lunch in Prague, and then do some work in the afternoon. But the negative side is people don't think about the fact that I'm often at my desk at 2 a.m. on a Sunday night, you know, and don't get me wrong, I know teachers are doing the same, but the thing about being an entrepreneur is, you know, the downside is, you know, you don't have a fixed salary, you know, you've got to hustle at work.
Yeah.
It's black and white. You get paid if you're working, you don't. So I think that, you know, to come back to what I said, I think how you're doing it is a really sensible advice. Just side hustle evenings and weekends. And are you enjoying it? Like, are you like, you've given up your weekend, you know, you're not going out windsurfing with your friends and drinking, you know, you're working on this project. Are you enjoying that? Are you not bothered about missing? If you are, then maybe it's a sign it's a good thing for you. If you're really thinking, I want to be jet skiing this weekend, then it's probably a bad sign. Yeah.
You know what? It's really cool. I made the decision to go full-time consulting for two reasons. One was more time with my family, young family, and the other one was to help more people grow and build capacity. And I was quite passionate about doing that because I think as a consultant, I realized from my warped mindset as a teacher that consultants are so disconnected from the classroom. I actually realized as a consultant that I'm more connected now and I know more about what's going on in schools than I ever have in my teaching career.
Yeah,
I'm able to work in schools all over the world. Absolutely. And I feel that I can sort of fight that mindset with evidence now that it's such a cool place to be. I mean, I give up some weekends and I go to conferences and do things, but as I've been able to grow my business and support schools, a lot of the work I'm doing now is actually with schools during the week. So I actually get to work during the week when my daughter's at school anyway, and I get to spend more time with them. So I did give up 3 or 4 years of weekends and holidays, but that hustle and grind is all worth it because now I can be much more flexible with my time and choose what I do. Last week's a perfect example. My daughter was on school holidays as a consultant. I was able to block out that week and just say, hey, I'm not going to work. I'm going to spend time with my daughters and just enjoy that time. And then, I mean, next week I'm going to be away and I'm going to be traveling, and that's just part of the deal. And as a family, we've figured that out just by doing, really, not being worried about it, not being concerned about it. We've just done it. And I think just going into the deep end and doing it is the best decision I've made.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we've got into a lot of topics on this podcast. And one thing that, you know, James Sayer, obviously, who you know originally from Apps Events, and me are really interested in is this whole teacher entrepreneur thing. We've had a huge interest in it. We're probably going to start a Facebook group and, you know, start it because there's so many teachers are interested in this topic. And my point of view is, you know, if you want to do an entrepreneurial venture, and there's a lot of different variations of what that could be. It could be a side project, like you could be doing speaking and consulting. It could be you're developing an app. It could be whatever. It might be something you're looking to leave teaching and do full time. Maybe it isn't, you know. But if you want to do it, you just need to do it, you know, because, you know, here's the thing. Even if you leave your job, you know, as long as you're not an idiot, as long as you do really good work, you leave on really good terms, you leave a lot of notice, you get great references, you could get a job again, you know. Like, you know, that's the thing. It's not like you're leaving your work and you can never work for a school again, you know. Like, you obviously have to leave on phenomenally good terms with your school, get great references, everyone loves you, then you can do it, you know. And I think that's the thing people forget, you know. It's not like, finally, if for some reason you have a few bad years consulting, you can go work for school again, you know.
And that's the thing as well, that I found that hard to start with. And I think now I say, well, if things don't go right and there's a global recession and no one wants me anymore, I know that I'm a good teacher. I can get a teaching job.
Yep.
I'm happy to go back and do that. And I think just have confidence in yourself that you've done a good job for. It's easy to slide back in. It's like riding a bike. You've done it your whole life. It's easy to jump back on and do it. Don't be scared. Jump out and give it a go, because opportunities breed opportunities, I think, too. So, like, as a consultant now, I mean, I'm connected with edtech companies, I'm connected with conferences, with startup companies, you know, all sorts of things happen just from stepping out and doing something different. And that's another thing that I'm loving.
So what's next for you? Like, are you obviously enjoying what you're doing? Is it more of the same or any new plans?
I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm really focusing my consulting time now and helping schools around the world develop edtech strategy, and helping them develop and roll out one-to-one device programs. They're quite specific into there around professional learning in those areas. Really enjoying working with leadership teams and developing culture around edtech in schools. The other things that I'm doing, I'm working with an EdTech accelerator program here in Southeast Asia called EduSpace, which is one of the first EdTech accelerators in Singapore and Southeast Asia. And I'm working as the educator in residence, supporting companies be better connected to schools and help with the education side of things with that. So I'm really excited about that.
Send me some information
off in
that.
A few weeks.
I'd love to get involved in that kind of thing. So I'd love to see what you're doing with that.
Definitely will. I'll send you some details. The guy's name is Nico Lindholm. So he's done this in Finland before, and I'll definitely connect you up. Other things that I'm doing, we're starting up a sub-teacher company here in Singapore called EduBase, which is connecting high-quality sub-teachers to schools. So just the opportunity for time. I'm just really enjoying doing some diverse things, working with EdTech companies as well to support the way that they roll out teaching programs, supporting companies actually roll out into Asia as well and get connected to Asian schools. So there's all sorts of things happening. I'm really enjoying it. And the diversity of my role is pretty special.
That's cool. One thing I didn't realize about you, I'm actually looking at your Twitter profile now. I didn't realize you founded PubPD, #PubPD.
Yeah, a long time ago now. A very long time ago now.
That's quite big. Do you want to explain what that is now? Because, I mean, I see that there's PubPD Asia and it's going all over the place.
Yeah. So, I mean, PubPD started with just a couple of mates and a beer and wanting to go to the pub and learn and chat and grow. I mean, as teachers, we talk school all the time. As educators, that's the way we are and by nature. And I think one of the things that we thought was, well, why can't we do that over a beer? So I actually was nearly – probably 7 years ago now, with a couple of schools in Australia, ran the first PubPD. And we ran it in a pub, like a teach meet in a pub. You pay some money, you come along, you get a whole bunch of free stuff. There's prizes, there's food, there's beer. You come and learn. There's people standing up talking for between 2 and 8 minutes. And that's about an hour of learning and networking and growing. And then from there, it sort of took off. And a group in Canada started doing it. And they approached and just said, hey, do you mind if we do it? And of course, it's not a money-making thing. I don't make any money. I think I've spent more money in doing it than making money. It's just a chance to grow and network. And then a couple of guys in Asia, Carlos Galvez, decided, hey, I wanted to do PubPD Asia. And I said, go for it. Just do it. Make the most of it. And I don't run them as such anymore. I do a couple in Australia, but I just love seeing that other people are doing it and networking and growing, and of course having a pint at the same time.
It's great. You know, I interviewed a guy. Well, I have another podcast called the Events Podcast where I talk about kind of running live events and training. I don't know if you've listened to it, but I have some really interesting people on that. And there's a guy in the UK runs the marketing meetup, and he runs all these meetups, and I learned a lot from him about running meetups, which I do. I run a lot of sort of casual meetups, and what I've started trying to do is, like, if I go to a new city, I'll try to just organize a meetup of educators and edtech people, you know. And it's just fun, actually, you know. I don't think I've got any business out of it, honestly, but you know, it's just, you meet some cool people, opportunities come, and some people you end up being friends with, you know. Like, so I now try to organize meetups. I'm going to do one in, sometimes I'm going to run one in San Francisco on Sunday. I think might be 5 people, might be 4 people, might be 2, you know, maybe it'll be 10. But, like, it's fun, and you never know, you know, you meet a lot of interesting people.
Yep, exactly. Love
it. Well, Craig, really interesting chat. I could talk a long time. I know you've got to do things, and I've got to go meet my wife before I do some family time before I fly away tomorrow. Where, like, we've mentioned some of your websites and stuff. Where's the best place for people to find you online?
Yeah, I mean, my blog, my website, MrKempNZ.com, Facebook, MrKempNZ, if you search it, Twitter, MrKempNZ, LinkedIn, Craig Kemp Singapore. Any of those places, you can find me on social by searching for Mr. Kemp NZ or Craig Kemp Singapore. Always happy to connect, always happy to help people grow as well and learn. Always happy to answer questions. And of course, just reach out. I'm pretty contactable.
Yeah, great. I'll drop your email into the show notes as well. So Craig, thank you very much for your time. Great to talk.
Thank you so much.